Oh, you dickheads.
Welcome to episode 33 of Double Dodge. This one's called Patient Zero. We talk with the original HIV-infected German Martin Koch. Come on!
David, are you okay?
No, mate. No, I think I've got HIV fish positive, yeah.
Ah, sad. Hey, look, we've been listening to the people. It's about the people. And they said roll out another German, or that's the way I interpreted it. So we have rolled out another German, and not just any old German. This guy was a WTC team winner. He came second at Vengeance. He, like you said, is the aforementioned HIV-ish positive patient zero. Fantastic. Martin Koch is a legend and was really nice to give us some of his time.
Yeah. I really enjoyed, like, a lot of the times I'm editing podcasts and it's kind of slow and tedious work, but with Martin, it was actually really lovely to listen back to that conversation. So we talked about fish, particularly from a new player experience, how to roll them out, how to importantly transition from shark to corsair, because we know where the real virus is, right? We know.
Yeah.
Some tips on, you know, how to play them, the type of game they like to play, the pluses, the minuses. But Martin's also jumped onto Mason's Camp, so we touched on that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We touched on a little bit of Vengeance, but the fact that he went back to Mason's, essentially, it was his first love, but based on his local meta, he felt he had to go to fish first. And he talks to us about that, similar on a new player experience kind of level, gives us some tips. We've got a local who's into the Masons. We think he's kind of hit the next plateau in terms of the skill, you know, the curve. So he gave us a bit of information there, and we pick his brains on a few different strats.
Yeah, so I guess we're looking at a new player-friendly approach this time around, but I think there's something for all players at all skill levels. Yeah. Martin's just a great guy, lovely to talk to. You know, we have a bit of fun. Yeah, I think we fueled up the Wang machine for this one, and we were not disappointed. We hit warp speed.
Yeah, optimal Wangs.
Speaking of optimal Wangs, shall we?
Indeed. And on the line for Double Dodge, we've got a WTC team winner 2017, a man who was runner-up at one of the largest tournament in the world, Vengeance. We don't want to rehash those sad memories. And also, we believe the HIV fish positive patient zero, Mr. Martin Koch. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm perfect. I'm glad you got my last name right. You're maybe the first English speaker who did it well.
I wanted to say it the other way, but there was something out of respect there. It's this bond Australians and Germans have.
It is so good to have you here.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
There was a recent summary of podcasts on Gubs. I don't know if you know Gubs. It's kind of like a dumpster fire, but on Facebook. And they were describing different podcasts, and Double Dodge was described as when you run out of sledging and gimmicks, roll out a German. So in true form, we've rolled out a German.
Yeah, thanks. Nice. Back again.
That's brilliant. You know, we obviously have share that bond, beer, football, and Guild Ball. So we thought we'd get you back on to talk a little bit of your dilemma with HIV fish, being HIV fish positive, and how you've moved on, how Timmy's given you the right drugs, and we've progressed on, and you've seen the error of your ways. But what Dave and I have noticed is a lot of our local players, when they first pick up the game, they jump onto fish, and they really get a lot of fun out of them. So we kind of wanted to talk around that to start with. I guess probably a good point to start with there is actually, how did you, you know, why did you choose fish, you know, whether it was your first guild or, you know, what brought you to them?
Yeah, when we start a new game, it's nearly every time the same. Timmy and some other guys went to the German Spiel convention. That's a big convention for board games. And a few days later, I get a message, "Oh, Martin, we picked up a new game. You can play this, this, or this. The rest is taken already." So I'm okay. I'm all in. Let's play. And it was the same with Guild Ball. And when I had a first look at the rule book, I liked the models. I liked the style of play. So the football leasing, and the other teams were already taken. If I had the choice, I would start it with Masons. But a friend of ours picked Masons, so I picked Fishermen. Never had a clue what they can do. I knew they can play soccer, and I like Blood Bowl. I like watching Blood Bowl, and they are like the football teams. And so I thought, hey, let's try a goal scoring team like Fishermen. And so I grabbed up Fishermen. That's all.
That's how it happened. I think yes. I think the aesthetic does actually draw a lot of people. I know. I for one started on them as well. But I don't know if you made this mistake early on when I played them. I've just had this wargaming habit of trying to punch people and kill them. Did you go through that as well? And then eventually work it, you know, a game or two before you worked out it's just all about football?
Definitely. After my first game, I think it took 3 or 4 hours and we played something like 2 or 3 turns. I said, oh, leave me alone. It's so complicated. And the stressful thing was all the dodgy things that I can move my guys around in my turn. I wasn't used to this. As you said, I was used to kill people, to make points per second, to win the game by punching my opponent. And fish don't work this way. And I've learned this pretty quick after maybe 2 or 3 games that I have to go for the goals. And when I started Guild Ball, there was no Corsair. So only Shark, so I have to go for the goals.
Oh, sad time. So you just had to play Shark for, you know, some of our like locals just love playing Shark and you were forced to. I feel sorry for you.
Yeah, it was a rough time.
old so Shark as well, pre-nerf Shark.
Ooh. Oh, that's actually a legitimately good Shark too, isn't it? Like, not that he's any bad now, but oh my God, yeah. Fantastic. So for those newer players, I think everyone kind of goes through that. You know, what kind of cool things were you doing? Were you doing the old gut and string for, you know, the whole team and then legendarying all over them? You know, the old season one, just grossness that was Shark?
I think I started just after the nerf that gut and string is just on his melee opponent.
Oh, boo.
So I have to punch people and then go to another and punch him again to gut and string him and then to legendary. Yeah, that was sad.
That is sad. I mean, when you can only get 2 models, kind of -8/-8 move, that's just not enough, I don't think.
Yes.
Yeah. So, sorry, go on.
No, yeah, but to be fair, blind was this time with the AOE of 3 inches and everybody was blind, so it was crazy. It was around season, the end of season 1, I think, or maybe just 2, I have no idea.
Yeah, no, it was definitely early on. It was back in the days of, you know, Midas having 7 influence and being able to just do whatever he wanted, so I loved those days. So you saw the error of your ways. No, Corsair came out. And how quickly did you jump across to Corsair?
Oh, when I play, things happen a little bit later than to other players. I saw Corsair and think, yeah, he's okay, but I was so used to playing Shark that I played Shark all the time and don't jump to Corsair because I think he was not good enough. So I never played him. And then we went on a tournament trip. It was Saturday and Sunday, 2 different tournaments in 2 cities. Yep. And because the first one was a beginner tournament, so I said, yeah, let's try Corsair. And I played 8 games on this tournament trip with Corsair, and I was totally mind blasted and fell in love with him. Mm-hmm. Liked to punch people. And that's how Corsair and I get a couple.
Oh, nice. True love story.
Yes.
I love it. So because we're, you know, we've got a few locals that are into their fish, and we've convinced a few of them to move across to the Corsair because we see them as the optimal captain. Obviously, there are certain situations that Shark works really well. What would you say to a newer player who's just come in, they're kicking heaps of goals with Shark? What's the thing that Corsair brings that just gives their overall game plan more validity?
I think when everybody's new and everybody's equal, it's pretty good to play Shark, and you will get good results in quickly because the other players try to keep up the pace with you. You score, they score, and you can't outpace Fish, or not every team can outpace Fish. Mm. But when everybody is getting more experience and becoming better, other guys try to hide the ball from you, ball killing, and so on. And Shark has to play on a 3-0 game plan. And Corsa can play 3-0, 0, or 0-6. He can take in 2 takeouts, 4 takeouts, and if he has to, even 6 takeouts. And Corsa makes your game more flexible, and because of the rough seas, it's harder for your opponent to hide the ball.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I've had a flashback of a game early on. Dave and I played, and I reckon it was literally the first one I played Corsair, and it was against Dave was playing Obulus, and I was trying to get the ball. I was trying to play the goal scoring. In the end, I just started beating up models. I don't know if I won or lost, but I at least beat up 5 models. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, no worries. This guy could actually just play the other end of the spectrum. It was just fascinating that it hadn't even occurred to me, because all his plays look like they're geared, well, not all of them, but the rough seas and the legendary are geared around the goal scoring. Yet his ability to control the board and mitigate, the scrum are really heavy, and you can actually just dominate that center quite well and play the takeout game.
Yeah, I think one thing everybody's underestimating about Corsa, that he's a pretty tough fighter, maybe one of the best in the game, because he's got a decent playbook, the knockdown on 2, reach is nice, and with the help of Siren and her lure and his drag, you can soak somebody in, punch him, and then wait, and next turn look for another easy target.
And go again. I love that. Yes. I love that. So that's an interesting point, because were you playing Avarice and Greed until they got ousted from the Fish?
At WTC, I choose not to play them.
Yep.
After the outcome of the Farmers, I needed more damage to kill Grace and Grange and Thresher than I was playing them. But I think you are in no need. You can play them. You could play them, but you can leave them at home and play somebody else. It's a 50-50 thing.
Yeah.
It depends on matchups. I'm fine when I had them, but I am now fine without them. That's no problem for me.
Do you have, is Gutter your go-to kind of union slot then? Or?
Yes, because you need... Sakana deals 1 momentous damage on 3, that's okay, but that's not enough, and you need a reliable damage dealer, and her 1 momentous on 1 and 3 momentous, 2 momentous on 3 is much better. So when I play Corsa, I have Gutter, and I have Gutter in my 10 as the union slot.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think, Dave, you played Gutter in yours even when you had the availability of Avarice and Greed, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I just like the way that Corsair sets up a scrum, and then Gutter can take advantage of a whole bunch of crowdouts to reliably hit Scything Blow, or to hit a chain grab and bring herself in another target. You know, there's a lot of opportunity with Corsair to set up the field in the way that favors your Gutter activation, and if you're careful, you can often take out 2 models in 1 activation, which is a bit living the dream, but, it happens more often than not.
Yeah, nice. I'm just silently being sick here.
So Martin, what mistakes do you notice newer Corsair players make? Like, when, what would you say is the wrong way to play Corsair, or what sort of traps do people fall into? Maybe they get too confident or something like that. But yeah, what's your experience with that?
One mistake for sure is to think Corsair is unkillable because of 18 boxes tough height. He can go down pretty easy to guys like Hammer, like Rage, or even some Farmers, or for sure an Ox. And you have to be very, very careful with Corsair. I think when you lose Corsair, because he's so slow, he isn't really capable of coming back and had us to bring some influence on the game. And I think when you lose Corsair, the game is nearly lost, and you have to be very, very careful with Corsair, so you can't overextend him. That's the advice I would give to a new player. Be careful with Corsair.
Yeah, absolutely. I've played him quite a lot in the last week or so against him with rats, and I'm just finding they've got a lot of really nice tools to just blow him up, like charging Pelage into him
with a bit
of singled out, and then just that passive damage that she throws on him is just fantastic. And then you've got that threat of Scourge just walking in and smashing him. So, yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's valid.
One thing I've noticed about Corsair is that he's a beta captain, he's a goal-scoring captain, but he also has these great control elements. So your point about, you know, sucking in a player and beating them down and then repeating that each turn, setting up the scrum in your favor, I find it kind of overlaps with the way Obulus likes to play. You know, he's got Puppet Master, which is, you know, usable as a drag effect. He's also got access to Kosset, who has Lure. You know, you see an overlap between the Corsair style gameplay and, you know, Mortician control style. What I do like about Corsair is that, you know, he's got so many more outs if things start to go wrong. Like having access to ball retrieval is amazing, and having access to explosive strikers like on your team. You know, nearly every player is a decent striker or an above average striker. So it just feels that like you've got so many different options and so many, I guess, tools in your kit that he switches up on the fly. Has that been your experience, man?
Yeah, definitely. On WTC, I played, I think it were 5 games, and I played every time the same 6. And it was exactly that what you were talking about. You can switch speed so quick. I can kill a guy, score a goal, so I've got 6 points. Maybe I can kill another guy. And I'm always was playing Jag, Siren, Sakana, and Grayscales, and they are so fast and so mobile. They can nearly score from every angle if I want or if I have to, so that I can easily score something like 2 to 8 points a turn if the opponent isn't aware of this. And this I think, is what makes Corsair so strong, the ability to switch the speed, the positioning of the miniatures on the board, that makes him so strong. And I think he's the captain with the highest win rate on Longshanks.
I believe so. Sorry, I was on there before. Just looking up, like, you know, page 57 and where my ranking was.
Yeah, ranking is an important thing.
Absolutely. So, I mean, Longshanks is absolutely accurate. I'm currently number 377 in the world. Corsair, yes, he is 59% win, like, win percentage. That's pretty impressive.
Yes.
You know, and that speaks for itself. Actually, out of interest, while we're on that, what, you know, if obviously Steamforged are looking at, you know, they continually balance the game. Do you think that's a balanced enough win percentage? Do you think a range between, say, 40 to 60% is adequate across all the captains, or do you think it should be a narrower percentage?
Oh, he wins 6 out of 10 games, and I think roughly 6 out of 10 games, and I think it's a little bit too good.
The percentage is a bit high, yeah.
Yeah, but I've looked it up. The second is Thresher, and he wins 58%. Maybe it's back from the days where he was a blast.
Yeah, but Rage is still 57, right?
And
he hasn't changed. So, you know, that's pretty interesting.
But Rage, veteran Rage is also winning nearly 58%. I'm not so sure. 6 out of 10 seems a little bit good. But maybe it is because Fischer played by a lot of strong players. And they win a lot, and it's the same with Alex Bots and his Butchers. He's winning because he's a good player with a, I won't say a bad guild, a not so strong guild, but yeah. I think I send them a reply on Twitter. When you get to the higher ranks of Guild Ball, the player is more and more important, and the team is something from 30 to 40%, and the player is more experienced, because there is no kind of list building, because you only have six guys and you have to take one captain, one out of two, and one mascot, one out of two, and then you have four players. Nearly every guild has an auto include, like the butcher, like the brewers, they always take Spigot. There is no game without Spigot. And they are just 1 to 2 flex players. And I think because all of that, the player is more important than the list.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Speaking on, now I know you've obviously been on Fish, off Fish for a little bit, with the new releases coming out, have you actually had a look or had a game or a bit of fun with the Vets Arcana?
Yeah, I played them, I have to lie here, 3 or 4 times on Vessel. And it's a dilemma for me, because Sakana and Jack are my favorite players on the Fisherman team. And now there is this veteran Sakana, and I've read all the discussions. He's better than Sakana, or Sakana is better than him. I think they are both equal, and the only weakness is the name, because I just can play one of them. I think you play the Sakana, who does the kind of job you want him to. The old Sakana can score goals, and he was a pretty good momentum farmer, because 5 attack, armor piercing.
Yeah,
and it's this momentous dodge on one. Nearly every attack was a momentum, and that was good. And the new Sakana, I love the non-momentous tackle on one, because it's maybe a top 5 tackle in the game, tech 5. With anatomical precision, so you can pretty easy grab the ball from guys like Velocity, if she hasn't nimbled, or Flint. That's a strong point, yeah, everybody is looking at, I think. And the fancy footwork and the Wraith the Red Flag is obviously ridiculous good.
Yeah, I love how both of those plays are almost like miniature versions of the two captains too. Like you've got the debuff of move, or you've got that or like mini rough seas. I really like that.
Yeah, he's a great first mate. I like how they've built him with that in mind, you know. You've got Corsair as the pirate captain, Vetsakana as the first mate. The weird thing here, Martin, is the resemblance between Campbell and Vetsakana is uncanny. I challenge anybody to stalk Campbell's Facebook page and see this for themselves.
I'm going to put a bandana on when I come to WTC for sure.
Yeah, you have to, definitely.
It's cosplay, isn't it? That's the only way we get in.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. Yep. I'm going to cosplay as a chubby Australian.
That's brilliant.
See how we go. Also, Bag of Coffers. Like, fuck. So versatile. He's just a beautiful set of rules. I really like him.
I do like the Bag of Coffers. Sorry, Martin.
No. Go on.
No, that's it. That's all I've got.
Yeah, I think he's a very good control piece, goal scoring piece, and even if you need momentum from him, he can do this as well. And from my opinion, not based on fact, just gut feelings, I think you play the old Sakana with Corsair, because he likes what was it called?
The armor debuff.
The armor debuff. Weak point, yes. Because he likes the armor, the weak point more to get up the killing game. And Shark wants to score 3 goals as quick as possible. And fancy footwork is obviously the best, or one of the best ways to get the ball off. But maybe someone can prove me wrong and it's the other way around. And I think you can play it the other way around as well. So I think they're both equal, and I'm sad they are all both named Sakana.
Mm. I think that's it. You've just basically, it almost becomes a question of just preference and yes. your and game style, which is fine. I actually like that about the game. I like that about a lot of the new models that are coming out or that have come out. So,
hey, how do you think Corsair looks like post gutter? Like when the Navigators roll in and Union options roll out? I mean, I guess we don't really know what that looks like. But I wonder if that's going to change the Corsair gameplay. I mean, I can't see how it doesn't, given that she is, you know, the most obvious choice for damage in that side, outside of Corsair.
Yeah, I think we have to wait here for the two Navigators. Don't know what they will bring to the table, but I think Corsair can still play a 2-2 game because he can... soak in some soft targets like Spigot, or the new Shizzle is great, but she's soft as well, and with some crowd outs, I think 2-2 is the way for Corsair.
Yeah, I think, and going back to your other point about Osakana being good with Corsair, I mean, he's the one with the viable momentous lowish damage with anatomical. So I think you just end up playing him more in a punching role as well.
Yeah.
So now that you've brought Vet Chisel into the mix, how the hell did you move on from Fish? Did Timmy give you some drugs and you were cured of HIV Fish positive, or what transpired there?
No. When we start picking up the teams for the WTC in 2018, things get a little chippy, a little edgy. It was the question, what was first, the egg or the chicken? Can I play or can I play just because I was playing Fisherman? And the general opinion was, yeah, he's just good because he's playing Fisherman. And... So I have to prove that they are wrong, and I went on to Masons because I own Masons as well. When I start playing Guild Boy, I bought them and they were painted and I like them, and I start playing them and it went quite okay, I think.
Yeah, I think it went okay. I mean, it's a little bit of a fuck you to the German WT selection team, but we won't go into that. So you took Masons to Vengeance, mate.
Yes.
I mean, obviously most listeners, that's a little while ago, know how that rolled out. But, I mean, tell us about your experience and how you enjoyed them and, you know, how it kind of went.
Yeah, first I have to talk a little bit about Vengeance. Mike and Jay did an absolute amazing job. It's a great tournament. I went there the second year in a row, and it's a pleasure. You meet all the guys from last year. You get some faces to the internet. Guys like Beardmini guys, he's such a nice dude, and I, all the other guys are so nice, and they're all very, very friendly. If you have the chance, go to Vengeance.
Nice. I just got to convince my wife and family, but I'm sure we can get there. That's fine.
Yeah. So what was Vengeance with Masons? Last year I played Fisherman and I went okay. I was 5-2. And this year my goal was to improve a little bit, but it's just you have to go from round to round, look at the matches, and just keep on playing the game. Try to do your hammer thing.
Yep.
And look if it's working or not.
Yeah. So last time we spoke, we talked about, and this was after WTC, with your teammates, you spoke about a game style where you were very clock conscious, I guess is the best way of putting that.
Yes.
Did you take that game style across to the Masons as well?
Not really. I try to be defensive and play fast, but Masons have not the tools of sucking in players like Fishermen have. And I try to kill as many players as possible and to play as long as possible, because I think that's where Masons are great, because they have all two armor, they have a good health pool, they can deal good damage, and they have some pieces to control fast teams like Fisherman. You can go with Mallet and Smash Jim's a good strikers, and then you can stretch the game out something like 4, 5, 6, 7 turns. And that's, I think, how long the game takes. Masons become better and better. And I think before I was playing Mason, doesn't really click for me. But I think the new game plans are pretty good for Masons, and they help them a lot to, I don't know if they are a tier 1 guild, but I think they are a good tier 2 guild. And this is because of the new game plans as well.
So can you elaborate on that? Like, what specific ones do you like in what situations?
It's not one card or the other card. It's more a thing. I know I have got, let's say, a 7, a 6, and some crappy things. And when I'm up 2 or 3 momentum, because of the way Mason's playbooks are designed, I know, okay, I can play the 7. I will win the initiative. And I've got maybe 3 or 4 attacks with someone like Hammer or Mallet. I can go for the high non-momentous damage. And this is helping Masons a lot. Because when there was a roll-off, oh, I'm +3. Yeah, there's a chance I can lose. So I have to go for the maybe 1 momentous damage. Now, yeah, I'm +3. I've got the 7, so I will win initiative anyway. So I can start punching him really, really bad. And I think this is helping Masons a lot, especially Masons because of the way the playbooks are designed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's interesting. I asked that question of Timmy, I reckon, when we chatted Brewers with him, and I posed that. I think the game plans were pretty new then, that engineers, for example, have a lot of, you know, decent damage, but it's all non-momentous.
Yes.
So I found that fascinating, that that's exactly what you found actually is transpiring. So do you find that you set up a model to go late in the turn for that very reason, or it's a little bit situational as to, okay, I've got this model left, you can just choose the higher results?
I think it depends on the board situation.
Yeah, so it's more a board state kind of call.
But it's nice to have these options. Mallet is a perfect example. The first result, what you're looking with Mallet is the singled out, I think, or maybe if you can hit the knockdown, but it's on 3. But after this, yeah, I score a momentous singled outs, and then I have so many dice, I can start punching one, and I will win initiative, and then he can finish the job, go away. And so I'm up in activation. That's pretty good. And
it's got 4 on fifth column. Is that right?
Yeah. 3 on 4 and 4 on 5.
All right. Boom. Yeah. I can see that as very good. Absolutely.
Yes.
Very nice.
Are you preferring Hammer over Honor? Did I hear you right, Martin?
When I was playing in the club, I'm always playing Honor. But on tournaments, I think I have played Hammer 20 games in a row or something, or maybe even more. And the reason for that is I think he has more good matchups than Honor has. And the Iron Fist, he can bring down a normal player by himself without setup.
Yeah, that's pretty reliable. So did you play Hammer the whole way through Vengeance?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought you might have. it was an all-German final. I mean, you don't have to go into the play-by-play, but do you want to give us an idea of how you felt that kind of match rolled out with your Hammer Masons?
Played the same matchup in round 5 against Frazier, and Dominic played the same matchup. I think it was also round 5 against Quinn.
Yeah.
And on this level, and it's because it's a very standoffish game, I think it comes down to who has got the ball first. In the game against Frazier, I had the ball first, so I'm up 4 points, and then he missed the crucial pass, and then I'm up 8-2, and then the game really started, and that's a tough hole. And against Dominic, it was the same. He's got the ball. He did a brilliant gutter activation gotta bring down Flint and score the goal, and then I'm down 0-6, and then it's pretty hard to come back. And we talked about this game after it was over, and the conclusion was, yeah, the first role was important, but that's okay for me.
No, it's interesting at the higher levels, and we've talked about it, and I know you and I talked about it straight after that because we were chatting on and off throughout the tournament. When you get to the high skill end of the spectrum, dice actually do become the determiner. And whether it's that roll off at the start or whether it's just, you know, a below average roll, sometimes that is basically the determiner of who's going to win. And I think, yeah, you're right. In that situation, because it's so standoffish, the person who gets the 4 points first, the ball, is definitely in the advantageous position if you assume that neither of you are going to make any horrendous mistakes.
Yeah, it's not the ball, it's the threat extension
you
can create with the ball. But it's I'm good. I think I'm not into chess that big, but I think white is in favor of winning because they go first.
Mm-hmm.
One player has to have the ball, and if it's me, I'm fine, and if it's the other guy, I'm fine as well. I have to do the best, make the best out of it. Maybe he missed a pass, maybe he made a mistake. That's okay. Yeah. That's how the game works.
Absolutely, and that's why we love it.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, definitely.
It's interesting, isn't it? Like you look at Shark's game, and if he misses any one of those three goal shots, he's so far behind. Meaning that, you know, he is playing this kind of knife edge game, which is based on low dice pools and hitting averages when he needs to. I find that really interesting, like this idea that where you do have two equally matched players, that sometimes it just does come down to, you know, who can get those slight advantages, whether that's, you know, taking first turn, whether that's having above average rolls. And I think that's overlooked sometimes. Like, yeah, I don't know. I've been thinking about it a lot over the last few days. You know, and I don't think anybody wants to complain about dice as a factor in games. But as one wonderful Polish player once said to me, well, you know, if you don't like dice, go play chess.
Which is fair.
Which is fair. I digress.
No, all good. I'm just going to pick Martin's brain on a few other things. One of our locals, Sean, we love him, he plays a bit of Masons. His biggest concern is lack of ranged attacks and how he gets controlled by range teams or range control teams. How do you deal with that, basically?
Yeah, first you have to make him watch 300 the movie when the Spartans get hit by all the arrows. You have to deal with it. There is no way. That's the bloody truth. You have to deal with it.
So don't worry about that.
There is no way. Masons are like the Spartans. They don't like arrows. They come straight into your face.
Yeah.
And there are ways to deal with this. The new Shizzle is nice because she can take one condition. Lucky is nice, he can take a condition as well. Veteran Harmony can take conditions and can took a point of damage here and there, and you have to slowly move in but not to overextend, and when you are in close combat the advantage is on your side because they are not that high on tech and you have one or two armor. Rick has got tough height, Hammer has got tough height, they have damage buffs, and then you can go for him, for them. But here the way is the thing you have to deal with. Just be patient, just take the shots.
Well, if I'm hearing you right by what you said before, it's actually also extending the game, and that's part of obviously what you've just said, but making the game go longer such that, your advantageous position is being in the scrum, or, you know, having those interactions where you're within melee.
Yeah, I think there's no way what he wants to do. He wants to, if you don't like it, then you have to switch to a range faction like Hunters. or are engineers or even alchemists. But when you when you play in masons, that's one of the weaknesses. And I think it's okay to have weaknesses. We Germans or I, we don't
have weaknesses. Read you.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely
perfectly engineered.
Alcohol is one of our weaknesses, I think. Well, no. The point is, we don't really often read in the forum because everybody is complaining. And when I'm bored, I look at the forum, and there was how to buff Angel, and one guy was making the suggestion. So Angel have to get 2-inch melee, and I thought about yes, definitely a model with defense 5 can buff her defense by her own to 6-8 move with super shot with a 5-10 goal threat with a momentous tackle on 1. Yeah, she definitely needs reach.
Yeah, absolutely. And she's got a double dodge on 2, doesn't she?
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably ridiculous like that too.
Yeah. I think people just asking the wrong questions. I heard about things all veteran decimate. Veteran decimate is pretty strong, and in nearly every podcast there is a question. Oh, do you think she's too strong? I think the important question is, yeah, there is veteran decimate. How to deal with her?
Absolutely. And then, you know, also if someone's bringing that player into their lineup, it's about how you assess the opponent's lineup and where they're going to put the momentum or the strength, or you know, where they're going to basically have the knife's edge coming at you, and understand that. Obviously allows you to mitigate their game style. So, you know, she's just one of those where you go, okay, they're playing them. How do I deal with that? Learn to deal with that.
I mean, actually, that's an excellent point about influence allocation, right? You can see your opponent's game plan in some form at the start of the turn just by where they've put their influence, right? So if they've loaded up Decimate, you know she's going to be a problem. So then you work back using that problem-solving process. Like, okay, what are my tools? How do I deal with that? You know, how do I drag out activations in such a way as to minimize the effectiveness of Veteran Decimate's activation? Like, I played a great game against Tobias Ford, and he had a fully loaded Decimate ready to wreck face. And it's kind of like, I'm playing Theron. What are my tools? Shit, I need to pin, then move into a situation where she is either going to have to spend extra resources, so extra influence, to get some kind of activation, or I can just waste her activations entirely, force him into situations where he has to take risky moves to get something out of her. So, I mean, I just wonder, you know, whether I think Martin's absolutely right in the sense that, like, the first reaction is to go, the rules are broken, how do we fix this model? As opposed to, actually, what is this model's role in the game and what's the counterplay? Like, I've been watching Jesse. Like, so Jesse Heiss, owner and operator of FreeCityGames.com, use the Double Dodge promo code to get 10% off your order. Double Dodge 10. Fucking fantastic bloke. But he's been playing a lot of Fish. He plays a lot of Corsair. But he's been running Corsair with Angel and just using her as like a one goal snapshot target. And he's pulling off all this fantastic bullshit just because Fish have above average kick stats and therefore have above average snapshot opportunities.
Yeah, you know?
So it's like, there's nothing wrong with Angel. There's nothing wrong with Angel. It's just like, let's think outside of the box a little.
Yeah, love the time that he pulled off a fucking snapshot when she's engaged. She was on one health. You hadn't killed her yet. That was fucking amazing.
Yeah, and you know, sorry, like it's low odds bullshit. And Jesse is the king of low odds bullshit. But you know, it still doesn't diminish the role that Angel can play in that team.
No, absolutely. And I think it's almost a situation where people just need to get a bit more creative with their models. Like, you know, don't just look at a model and go, oh, it plays this way. And I found that fascinating about, you know, the way we look at kind of all these models, you know, the Sakana and those sorts of things. I love how Martin's straight away gone, actually, that low tackle on Sakana is one of the most impressive things that you see, whereas the rest of us are looking at everything else on his card. Like, I find it fascinating that everyone looks at it in a different way.
I mean, also, you put it in the context of Hammer now being a legitimate meta threat, whereas we rewind to a year ago, and nobody's thinking that way, apart from the fucking Germans, who, you know, they've like, they can see the code, they see the Matrix for what it is. I was talking to Steve Easton today, and he's basically saying, like, you know, what's your answer to Hammer? If you're going to WTC, if you're going to a tournament, what's your answer for Hammer? And, you know, I'm saying to him, well, I feel like Theron has a decent game. He's like, no, mate, like Vet Harmony, another model that has been uniformly panned, soaks all of Theron's damage. Therefore, Hammer is not snared. Therefore, your control options are reduced. It's like, fuck, you're totally right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. My solution is to win the other two games. Sorry, is that not? I'm just thinking outside the square here. I don't know. Or you just throw your Hammer player into the Hammer player and let them slug the fuck out of each other.
Yeah, but I think it's a legitimate strategy. If you have no way, so think about the other two games. I think it's okay for that. It's a team tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that about WTC. I mean, I can definitely see situations where one player, you know, loses and feels bad, and then the other two players pull them through, and you get that team kind of atmosphere where, you know, sometimes people fuck up in football and score an own goal, but, you know, the team wins on the whole and everyone's happy. I like it.
Yeah. Our second team last year did this. They said, I think it was Daniel. He was thrown through the wolves every turn, but they win every round. I think it was 2-1, and so they made it to the final. They had two decent matchup, and one guy who was used as a punching ball. That's legit, I think.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Let's just be careful not to give away too many really good tactics before WT. I know we're a fair way out, but. Actually, on that, what I did want to talk a little bit about, you know, the global meta or what you think's strong in that. I mean, obviously, you don't want to give away too much of your own German tech. But what do you think is strong? I mean, off the top of your head, what would be, you know, three strong teams to take into WTC? Or maybe even, you know, what do you reckon are the top kind of teams that work together well?
Yeah, to be honest, there is no German tech. it's funny because everybody is talking, all the German secret. We have no secrets. We just play. We just talk.
You know, we're going to delete this bit out of the podcast. So let's pretend there is German tech.
No, mate, the German tech is gaslighting. They're gaslighting us. Oh, you guys are crazy. Oh, we don't have no tech here. You're all fucking mental.
The meta game's going on right now.
I think maybe if you can say there is a German tech, we play what we like. Daniel is the guy from the elevator from WTC last year. He's just happy when he plays what he likes. Same with Timmy. He loves to play the janky shit, red catchers. It can't be janky enough for him. He's happy with those things, and I'm happy with playing fish. I'm happy with playing masons. I think maybe this is one thing. When you are good with your guild and you flag it, it is not so important that it's maybe not that good, but you're feeling good, and that's
what. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The confidence actually plays a part in it. Like, I mean, Dave and I, we've been playing a few different guilds, and I jumped across to Rats just for a freshen up, and I'm just enjoying them. And whether, you know, I don't know where I take them, but in terms of how I'm enjoying the game, I've found that love again, and so I'm going to play them, you know, for a little bit longer because I'm enjoying the game, and I think that puts you in a much better mindset than grinding out of a team where you're trying to think of odds and, you know, it just doesn't feel right and the play style's not what you're looking for. So, no, I completely agree with that.
I find this talk fun, deeply disturbing.
Yeah, we're not going to WTC for fun.
Yeah, we're just into winning. No, back to your question. What is strong? I think hunters are in a pretty good position because of the new Minerva. She's an excellent toolbox. I think they will help hunters. Fish are always strong because they are fish. They can score pretty fast. Engineers are annoying because of all the control things. Yeah. But I think A well-played Obulus is strong as well. When someone like I think David Cameron, one of the English guy, was playing Obulus all day, and there are things you can do with him.
Well, the red pitches are good. Put seven on as well.
Yeah. Secret tech, put seven Secret on him. And tool of him, that's important as well.
No, I did. I got a game with Perkins the other night, and he obulused me. It was a fucking impressive game, but it was good fun. It was 12-11. Great fun. But sorry, you were saying, who else is top tier, do you think, and good fun?
Yeah, Veteran Rage is strong as well, I think.
He's so good. He's just another toolbox. I think he and Corsair, just in terms of the versatility of their game, is like, yeah.
But I think we have to look at this at a certain perspective. Is there a really, really bad guild at the moment?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there was some doom and gloom about Alchemist being shit, but I just don't see it personally. Like Midas being a bad striker, I don't see it. Like he's just as good as he's always been. I mean, like he's obviously not broken anymore, but within the context of him as a season 3 captain, he seems quite viable. You know, I think it really goes back to your point, Martin. Like, actually, it's player skill that's the great determiner.
Yeah, for sure.
I love it. And with that, you've just ruined all my questions. No.
Go on. Just pretend I didn't say anything. I'm sorry. There's definitely a tier list, and some guilds are shit.
Yeah. No, they're all, and we should just look at the percentages as absolute facts. I think that's very important. So WTC, have you guys even decided your teams? Have you worked that out yet, or is it still in the stage where Timmy doesn't, you know, he just wants to toss a coin to see what he plays, and everyone else is kind of knowing what they're after?
No, our teams are, we send four teams, and they are fixed about, I think, like something like 6 to 8 weeks. And we are just figuring out which guild we want to play. I think our first team has got already found out what they want to play, and I'm playing with Daniel and Christoph is playing Hunters, and I will play...
Don't give away your tech. This is like, you know, Americans might listen to this. They hate us, but they might listen to this.
Yeah, the secret hammer tech, give him 5 and Iron Fist, but... I'm playing Mathens. I try to get as many games in, work on my mismatches. In 2 weeks, I'm in France to play the France Nets. I will bring Mathens as well. And then it's the same with WTC as last year, or with Vengeance. You have to go to the table, look at your first opponent, and try to win. And then it's go round by round. You have to be lucky as well to win a tournament. You have to get some good cards, average rolls. I think that's all you can do.
Yeah. No, that's right. I mean, it's funny how often you hear competitive players say that. You know, a tournament win comes down to luck as much as skill. I mean, I think again, when you're all at a comparable skill level at those top tables, got to get a bit lucky.
For sure.
The amount of times I've heard that across different game systems, it's almost a truism at this point, I think.
I think Trent Dennison said it's definitely true, and he would back that up.
Deno never lies.
No. He's never wrong.
No.
No, absolutely.
He's definitely convinced of that.
So he's secret American?
He got sad, and he came back, and he felt like he was just brutalizing the meta. He destroyed the Queensland meta and then just quit the game. He's still a mountain of a man, though. So
actually, he's a fucking... Man, his painting. I don't know if you follow his painting on Twitter, but...
Yeah, I do.
Oh, my God, what a fucking monster. That dude has put in the work, and it's paying off. He's a funny bloke, his old Deno, but not without his charms. I was going to say something about fucking competitive play, and it's gone straight out of my head. So
the last topic was luck and competitive game, maybe.
Yeah.
This will help you.
Yeah. Just get good, roll good, don't be shit. Actually, to be fair, I found that I think my confidence in the rats is rubbing off, because I've been doing some janky goal runs where I'm taking like one dice, like, you know, shots at goal. I haven't missed one yet. And I think it's just because I'm enjoying the game, because I'm just willing the dice to roll onto the correct side that it wants to be on.
So I don't think it's got the heart of the dice.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Honestly, there's this at the club. There's a few players, and a few of us have opinions of their dice. And I'm known as one of the guys that has, like, you know, janky fucking magic dice. And I think it's just a bit of confirmation bias that, you know, I believe my dice are going to go well, and I maybe say it occasionally, and they do on those occasions. They're fucking average. Everyone's dice average out in the long run. But, you know, just that opinion that someone's dice are what hurting their game or not.
And there is nothing. I don't know if you have watched my game 5 on Vengeance.
Who was that against? I watched most of yours live. Or if that was that on the stream?
Against Frasier. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I remember.
I missed, I think, 1,000 passes, but they were risky, maybe one or two dice, and you have to live with it. You have to keep on playing, and when I take a one-die pass, I was looking for the momentum, but on the other hand side, this pass can go wrong and go terrible wrong, and I have to deal with it. And there's, oh no, I rolled a one, so I just needed a four. There's this chance, and you have to keep on playing, and not looking at the dice, because what you said is totally true. On the long term, everybody's rolling nearly the same or equal as the other guys.
Absolutely, absolutely. The saying that Dave and I have is, it's not your dice are bad, your maths is fucking shit. Or bad, I don't know. Are we allowed to, like, swear on this podcast, Dave?
Generally, no. Yeah, but it's okay. I'll just bleep it. It'll be all right.
No, that's all right. That's singled out. You're not allowed to swear on, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
they're pretty strict. Pretty strict.
Yeah.
Apparently, like, Mountain is a bit sensitive, so like Andrew tries to keep him calm.
Otherwise, I thought Andrew had Tourette's.
No. Mountain's the one with Tourette's. Yeah. So.
Fuck. So they do like a 5-hour recording just to get the 1 hour of actual like audio. Jesus.
Yeah. It's like doing claymation or stop motion. It's basically that.
Brilliant.
Nice. Yeah. Sorry, Martin, that was just a complete tangent. It's nothing like singled out. They don't go on tangents.
That was the sledging part of the podcast. We're a bit short on gimmicks, but we do have a German, so 2 out of 3.
Everything is better with a German.
Absolutely. Oh, there's a t-shirt in that. I'm going to bring fucking t-shirts with that written on it. Yeah. All right, give me 2 secs.
Cam's off to make a t-shirt.
I'm just written it down. It's going to happen. This is going to happen. It'll be like Perkins watch, but it'll be just like German watch in elevators or something. I don't know. We'll come up with a good hashtag. It'll be fine.
Sure.
Yeah, we are big elevators. We love elevators. Yeah.
Now, can you shed any light on that whole elevator love? I know, you know, it was some kind of backstory that Timmy gave us, but they're just like drunken in elevators. It was just a random occurrence, or I don't know. What goes on there?
I think it was Daniel last year at WTC, because he was so drunk. To be fair, he drove us all the way from the middle of Germany to Belgium. It was a 6 to 8 hours hell of a ride. And after that, he got pretty drunk pretty fast. And then he was lying in the elevator. And yeah, I think that's all.
Shout out to Daniel. You're a champion. Good driving.
Yeah, he is.
6 hours, yeah.
Definitely.
So did you say which team is he on? Is he on yours or?
Oh, Daniel's one of the guys who is bored after playing one game with one guild and then he have to switch. To be honest, at the moment he's into alchemists and he was working something out there. The guys went to Scotland and he was playing alchemist, did really, really, really well. And maybe he's bringing alchemists to WTC.
There you go. Nice. I do love the alchemists, but I've kind of found that the rats, I don't know, they're this weird hybrid of a few teams that I've played in the past, and they just fill all those kind of gaps. You know, you got the alchemist conditions, you got a bit of the fish scoring, You know, Scourge is a little bit like Vet Cat. You've got the victory point acceleration. Yeah, rats are just loads of fun. I don't know where
it's going. Trash tier, mate.
They are. Yeah. They're super shit, and they just die for their own diseases. But fuck, they're fun in the process.
Yeah. Yeah. After 17 rounds, Scourge is dead. As well, or it is 16 rounds. I have no idea, but they will die to the disease. That's true.
Yeah, at some point, they die, right? Yeah. Yeah. Not before some of your players.
Yeah. Oh man. I'm just really excited. Actually, apparently Oktoberfest is on the week after the WTC. Martin, should I go to Oktoberfest? If not, why not?
Definitely. If you're like German beer and good food, you have to go. And I think when you do all the long trip from Australia to Poland, it's not that far to go to Munich, and you have to definitely go to Oktoberfest.
Right. Can you convince Cam of this idea? Because I think he needs it more than I do.
Yeah, can we all go to Oktoberfest?
Fuck yeah, yeah, Cam, we'll get in! Get in, son!
Is Daniel going to drive us?
I will ask him. And if he's not willing, I will drive you.
Oh, my God.
Brilliant. Brilliant. It's been laid out.
Yeah, I'm going to Oktoberfest.
Done.
Yeah.
Can't wait. Yeah, it's going to be an awesome trip, man. It's going to be an awesome trip. Any other Guild Ball stuff we want to talk about? Or do we just want to sort of drift off into platitudes and general insults? Maybe it's time for the platitudes and general insults segment. Here we go.
That is a segment now, officially.
I actually think that's the meta. That's the meta situation of this podcast. So we're always within that broad environment, but sometimes we specifically deal with it. I'm a little bit drunk actually.
Yeah, I'm plumb out of questions. Martin, you have been an absolute legend, mate. I'm glad we finally got you back on too. So yeah, can't wait to see you. It'll be good.
And yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, no, it'll be awesome.
Yeah, mate, it's always nice to have a chat with you. You're such a composed and thoughtful individual. I can't wait to see you wild, out of control, and drunk in your undies.
Welcome back. That was a great little listen. I love talking high-level strategy with Germans. It's fantastic. David.
Yeah, well, I mean, they do a good turn in the high-level strategy stakes. Mm. I feel you can say it with a lesser degree of facetiousness than usual.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was like I would liken it to consuming sauerkraut, I believe. Yes, yes. Have you ever had sauerkraut?
Yeah, I've had sauerkraut.
Because on the outside, sometimes it can be a bit abrasive, seem like something you don't want, but the goodness that it instills inside your body, it's necessary. It's a necessary kind of evil. So this is where I put the perception of the German meta and our conversation. It's goodness once you get inside.
Right. So you're basically saying the German meta is good for your macrobiotic gut flora.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you'll live longer.
I have no idea about any of that, but okay.
Okay.
I'm willing to trust you and go on blind faith here.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm all about organic food, looking after your gut, eating healthy. If you want any tips, just send me a message. I'm not actually qualified in any of these areas, but I'm more than happy to fill in some of the punters on, healthy diets, a bit of exercise. I'm there for the community.
High level strat. So moving from the practical to the also practical, do we have any shout outs to?
Well, I think there is one man in the Australian meta who has single-handedly taken on the selling and dealing of the Guild Ball drugs, and that's Jesse Heiss, freecitygames.com. He's a legend, supports a lot of the stuff in the community, and has managed to give us a promo code, David.
Yes, good old Jesse. Promo code is Double Dodge 10, and you get 10% off your purchase with FreeCityGames.com if you use that promo code at checkout.
Yeah, no, it's pretty awesome, and it's great that he's, you know, nice enough to do that. He actually sent me some widgets last time around as well to dish out to our local meta. So he's all about kind of helping the community, and he's running the Free City Cups at the moment.
Yeah, they're good, man. Online vassal tournaments. So he's even thrown some prize support behind online tournaments. We've opened it up. It was originally just an Australian tournament, but we've opened it up to players across the world. I'm not sure what he's going to do with the next one, but yeah, keep an eye out for that if you're interested, because he throws up on the Australian Guild Ball Facebook page when it's going on.
Yeah, absolute legend. So thank you very much, Calamari Heiss.
Jesse Calamari Heiss. Never were truer words spoken. We should also throw a shout out about Australian Nats. 25th of August, that'll be day one. Cut to top eight, day two, the 26th. That'll be in Campbelltown in Sydney at the Hall of Heroes. If you're on the fence, just sign up. Like, there's a link on the Australian Facebook page. Seriously, it'll be a great weekend out. If you're worried about costs, we're having conversations about, you know, accommodation sharing and billeting and all that sort of shit. So jump on, be part of that conversation, get yourself registered. I think we're close to 30, which is the cutoff point for the golden ticket. So it's looking pretty good. And a big shout out to dudes like Ed Lambeck in Canberra, Matty Graham in Canberra, Aaron Hartwell and Hayden Sheehan also. Aaron is Sydney, Haydos is Orange. They've been doing a lot of work to grow the Australian meta, and we're seeing more and more dudes come to the game, and ladies as well. And yeah, I think it's going to be a good one this year, much better than last year, even if we're dealing with Kiwis as part of that mix.
Yeah, look, the Kiwis come over, and, you know, kudos to them for flying over. It costs them about $100 less to fly over than it does you and I, David, but that's fine. Massive shout-out when speaking of ladies of Ella. She's a champion. I think she holds up the orange medal. I'm not sure Hados actually fucking does anything. He's like bastard. Ella, you're a legend. Can't wait to catch up with you guys at Nationals.
Excellent. I think that pretty much covers it. Maybe the Patreon. Do we have
absolutely.
Patreon? Do people still...
We do still have it. It is still alive. Patreon.com/DoubleDodge. Basically, that's just to help us kind of fund things like WTC, helping out the community. We put a bit of that money towards our local leagues that we run. We've also sponsored bits and pieces of things that have gone into the Nationals. An example of that was an illustration I had commissioned for one of the sexy little widgets that may or may not be there. So, you know, sign up for Nationals because there's some pretty cool swag.
Yep. Get on it. Get on it. So thank you for those who support the Patreon. Double Dodge is a shit show. Like, let's not fucking mince words about this, mate. It's a shit show. So we're just grateful for whatever people are happy to throw. If you get something out of it, we're really glad. We appreciate the money that you do donate, and we'll do our best to get back to a normal recording schedule overseas.
David had to go find his spirit animal in Japan. Did you find it?
I did, mate. I did. Yeah. I thought it was a bear, but it's actually a turtle.
Fair. Yeah. A mountain climbing fucking turtle, though.
Oh, best part of Japan.
Yeah.
Pouring rain all day, walking through this forest. Crazy little forest crabs. These little orange and black forest crabs just come out on the trails. Blew my mind. Never seen it before. Maybe my spirit animal is a forest crab.
I like it. I think we should strap some butter knives to your claws.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Tooled up, bitches.
Yep.